Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And today it's...
Birds.
Birds.
All about the birds.
Birds.
Yep. You know...
It's just silly to say. So let's get into the trickiest one to cook. Let's get into pheasant.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, and what a wonderful bird. Now, pheasant, I would not eat medium rare. This is not one of those birds.
This is the palest white meat bird.
Yeah, it's, you really are looking for medium to medium well, and medium meaning barely.
I was going to say
probably really just medium normal.
Cook through and juicy is your goal.
Yeah. So that's the thing. And so now this time, my experience with cooking pheasant, I have almost always put bacon underneath the skin because it is so lean. We were just talking about the shape of the leg. The legs are long and lean. There's not even that much meat on the legs. There's a lot of bone, tiny little bones and sinew and things in the legs. Pheasant legs are tough to deal with. The breast meat is delicious, but you're just not going to get much out of the legs. I would not roast the bird whole. I would confit those legs and end it there. And I would cut the breast off the bone and grill it or roast it, saute it and pan roast it, either way. And that would be great stock from those carcasses.
Confit pheasant legs, a little bit pulled apart and a little bit crispy as a garnish for like a saffron risotto or something.
Right.
Fantastic.
Delicious.
Amazing.
That's one of my favorite garnishes for risotto, meat-wise. Somebody asked me what I would do with truffle risotto the other day, and I'm like, well, if you're going to make me put something with it, which I don't think it needs in any way, I would put a confit meat or bird with it for sure.
Yeah, something. Well, the saffron's so pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just get it a little crisp and a little bit of butter and a pan, there's a little change in texture.
You're talking about the confit or
the confit?
Yeah, because saffron is soluble in water.
Yeah.
So you need to
add saffron is part of the risotto itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but crisp up the confit meat, yeah, that would be fun.
Or in the spring when English peas come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do a, well, anyway, that's a different animal.
But cooking the breast of the pheasant,
mm-hmm.
Now the question is if you put bacon under the skin, you'll keep it from being too lean. But do you get the flavor that you want to get?
I don't think bacon will, you know, as long as you don't go for some crazy, you know, hickory smoked, long smoked bacon that's out of this world. You know, if you go for a pretty neutral bacon, it will. Yeah, sure. It's going to. It can't help but impart some of its own flavor. But the bird will rise above it and it'll keep it moist. So as long as you just slip it underneath the skin between the breast meat and the skin, and you don't need, you know, you only need one piece in there. You know, you only need one layer. Don't overdo it. And really, probably for the size of a pheasant breast, you could probably even put half of a good sized piece of bacon in there. You don't need that much, and it will do its job. And or you could put butter underneath the skin. If you are going to roast it whole, I would absolutely put butter underneath the skin. You can just slip it in from the neck cavity. And I would definitely stuff a pheasant if I was going to roast it whole. There's enough of a cavity there to have some pretty good stuffing taste.
I think that one of the tricks of pheasant also is just like what is the source? If you're a consumer and you want to buy a pheasant, the number one question is, has it been frozen?
Right. For sure. And yeah, I mean, you're definitely, when you start talking about cooking food like this, you absolutely have to find the best product you can. There's no fooling.
You're not going to do it five nights a week,
right,
so you might as
right.
well.
Just go find out what is the best one you can possibly buy.
Exactly right.
Maybe you live in Virginia. Maybe you live somewhere near a farm. You know, go get it. I mean, go try the local farmer's pheasant. I mean, I'm sure
find out what the day is you should pick it up.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited about the other thing about my new neighborhood, my new farming area. There's a guy down the street that, you know, you can just go. He puts eggs out every morning, and you can just honor system and, you know, pick up a bunch of eggs and leave your money in the little bucket thing. I'm like, oh, God.
Pick up your morning honor eggs?
Yeah, it's so great to be in the country. It's awesome.
You don't like it, do you?
I love it. It is
spectacular. But you don't like it, do you?
Spectacular. Mm-hmm. I love it. Yep. I'm as happy as a chef could possibly be. So back to birds. Which one do you want to talk about next?
Chicken is, I think, the most often assassinated bird in our culture, right?
Both,
yes. Both literally,
yes,
and culinarily, okay. Figuratively, right?
Right.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
And not that long ago, a chicken breast went out to a guest that was cooked perfectly, moist, cooked through, crisp on the outside, on the skin.
I'm waiting to hear
and
what happened.
Brown edge on the bone.
Uh huh.
and sent back immediately because the guest thought it was rare. And I know it was because it wasn't because it was pink or it was undercooked. It was,
it was juicy.
168 degrees internal temperature when it came back to the kitchen. It was because it was juicy, and I think they had never encountered that. You're used to getting something that looks like a white hockey puck that's been chopped up into bits.
That reminds me of airplane food. Yeah, I mean, again, chicken is, you know, something that we, you know, it can feed a lot of people. It's inexpensive food. If you can afford to buy a better chicken, please do. Oh my gosh.
It
makes
sourced.
A tremendous difference because, yeah, the way, again, it all comes back to the way it's handled. You know, how does it live? Is it at all free range?
And the breed.
Yeah, the breed. And the breed, what's it fed? You know, and what is its environment? And a happy chicken produces some pretty darn good food.
Well, it's amount of flavor. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
So when you roast that bird, or you pan fry those chicken thighs, or,
and there's so many different things you can do to chicken. I mean, it is endless what you can do to chicken, and you know the thing, company wise, because it is such a neutral flavor. It's a mild sort of sweet bird, inherently sweet. That you know it's you can roast it with garlic and, you know, vegetables, or you can saute it, or as you say, pan fry the legs or grill it, or I've confit the breasts and used that with risotto. It's endless. And just don't overcook
it. It's always source and care.
Right. So just try to buy the best one you can.
Source and the amount of care and how it's cooked.
And then cook it when you get it. In other words, don't sit on it in your refrigerator for a couple of days either.
No.
You know, in the end, you have to handle your product well, too. So it's your responsibility. If you want to serve great food, you know, you want to serve it quickly too.
Well, if the bird is going from, you know, being slaughtered to on ice at the butcher to you, cook it when you get it. I mean, your flavor is going to be its best and texture is going to be the best.
Right.
When that's the case, and it's going to be.
Yeah, one of my favorite things my mom used to make when I was a kid was she would occasionally roast a whole chicken. We often ate chicken, but it was usually breast meat or sometimes we might have the leg meat only. But when she would roast a whole chicken and stuff it, I mean, we were all just, you know, and she'd make potato puree and we'd have English peas or, you know, whatever green vegetable was available. And I mean, that's just one of the great American meals, you know, it's worldwide. I mean, you know,
I was gonna say, roasting a chicken is the holy grail of a lot of,
it really is,
a lot of cuisines. And it's something, I mean, I know for me, I mean, you know very well, that's a giant point of pride and annoyance for me, that like, okay, this should be done really, really well. And I know it's going to take a lot of time and a tremendous amount of care and a lot of basting and a lot of really thorough seasoning and a lot of thoughtfulness in how it's cooked and how it's rested. But it's doing all of the basics really, really well, and buying a good bird.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And do rest the darn...
Yeah, that's what we need to talk about.
Chicken.
Big deal.
People, like, it comes out of the pan and they just like start chopping it up.
No. You have to let the juices redistribute back through the bird.
Same with a piece of fish, same with any piece of meat.
Exactly.
And people don't often do it. Especially the leaner the meat, the more important that it is.
And I also don't take a chicken out of the refrigerator and roast it immediately. I mean, I'm not saying don't go overboard. Don't let it sit out for 30 minutes, but let it sit out at least for a few minutes before you pop it in the oven. I mean, you're going to season it. You're going to handle it. You're going to wash it, pat it dry so it is dry.
Before you season it.
Right.
You want it to be dry.
Yeah, wash it first. Dry it.
So the seasoning absorbs nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a whole bird, you want to season it inside and out, the cavity, all parts of it. Not heavily, just thoroughly.
Right. It will just roast more evenly, you know, if it's more room temperature.
I mean, the same technique that you use to roast a chicken, you can use to roast a pheasant. It will just take less time and more care.
Mm-hmm.
If you baste the chicken every 15 minutes or so, you know, say a 4-pound bird, then that pheasant, you're going to have to baste it every 8 minutes and keep probably turning it around in the pan a little bit.
Yes.
And one of the old tricks to try to get to when you want browning to stop is to add a little bit of vinegar to the pan. And when you baste with that, then that will stop the caramelizing effect on the skin.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it too early,
right,
or you end up with a very pale bird. but if you have a relatively hot oven, you know, what temperature for you roasting a chicken?
350 degrees.
So at home, you can run a little bit slower. I know in the bistros, we run it hotter than that.
Oh, definitely. At work, it's 425.
Yeah.
I mean, we run our ovens at 425 throughout service, period. End of story, you know, for cooking. And then we keep a second oven for bread service and pastry service that's at 350. But, you know, you have to keep those items separate.
Yeah, you don't want your apple tart to smell like
fish.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not. So you'd asked me before, my favorite, guinea fowl is my favorite. Let's talk for a minute about cooking guinea fowl, because it's a little bit different. There's a density to the flesh of those birds.
Yes. Again, you're going to have to be super careful not to overcook that bird. It's a more white meat bird. It's definitely going to dry out very quickly. So, you know, you do want to cook it all the way through, but keep it moist and juicy. And I think with guinea fowl, I would probably prick the skin a little bit, maybe with a sharp paring knife, just tiny little bit, just to help it to sort of self-baste even.
I'd melt out a little fat from the skin.
I would definitely rub it with butter. I would probably put butter under the skin again. I would not put bacon with guinea fowl, I don't think.
It has a good, strong flavor of its own. It's not strong like...
I'd kind of like
the
to
red
leave
meat
it alone.
Birds.
Right, right.
But it has a really good strength of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
I do love cooking them whole, roasting them whole.
Definitely. That one, I'm with you on that.
I love roasting them with mushrooms.
Oh.
If I can get...
Oh, my God, chanterelles or porcinis
if I can have truffles to put under the skin, that's nice.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And like Christmas Day.
Oh, yeah.
I've done it a couple times Christmas Day, and it's just fantastic.
That's amazing.
The skin is a little bit thicker and tougher on guinea fowl, too. And so it not only has the fat, but it kind of, it will get a great color and will really, you know, will tighten up on the flesh of the bird and give you something really crisp and solid to deal with when you go to carve the bird later on, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would definitely, in carving that bird, I would use a slicing knife, and I would absolutely try to do the thinnest slices I could. I would not... You know, sort of like when you do your turkey,
them.
You know, yeah, exactly.
You can get them. It's not like a piece of veal, but it is almost like a piece of veal in that you can cut it very, very thin and mm-hmm. have it be beautifully textured. And
well, like you were saying about the mushrooms, I mean, I can definitely see chanterelles. Morels or porcinis would be really beautiful.
You're making me want to put porcinis in the cavity.
Oh, boy.
Next
yeah,
time
for
I roast
sure.
a guinea fowl.
And just, I can see rosemary sprigs in there. The classic duck dish à l'orange, I'm really not into putting citrus in a bird like this, but maybe a lemon. Orange, no, but maybe just a little bit of lemon, especially if you
do
have
rosemary.
I'll often
roast a chicken at home with lemon, rosemary, and
mm-hmm.
garlic
mm-hmm.
And, in the cavity.
And you could put little onions in or shallots or whatever. And I just think that bird is going to produce such good fond on the bottom of the pan that you're just going to make the best little pan sauce with that.
The fond you're talking about is all like the sort of like melted, caramelized protein goo that kind of sticks to the bottom of the pan. That,
exactly.
That when you scrape it later, when you deglaze that pan with a little bit of wine or whatever,
mm-hmm.
it's going to have a ton of flavor.
Definitely. And you can make just a spectacular sauce, especially if you have some of that flavor from the mushrooms and the other aromatics, if you're using, you know, cipollinis or whatever, or garlic.
It's funny. With wine with guinea fowl, you see the white meat bird, and you know you have to manage the fat content, but the flavor is good and the texture is real. You know, it's denser than chicken, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it's juicy, it's still denser.
Definitely.
It makes you want something a little more serious. So if you'd want white for it, even though, say, Pliny Moroshay or some great California Chardonnay like Marco Bear's Chardonnay, while they're great, big, and showy, you want something a little more austere and structured for that, like a Corton Charlemagne or an Auxi Jaurès or something. If it's red, the thing is you don't need anything for tannin. As tempting it is for strength of flavor, mm-hmm. you really don't.
Okay.
Burgundy is nice. Pinot can be nice, but mind the alcohol a little bit. But I think my favorite is really, really noble Barbera with a little bottle age on it.
Yeah, you keep coming back to Italy with the birds. That's interesting.
It's, you know, because you want the acidity. You want the little bit of sharpness. You want the cleanup. But you don't need, a lot of times, you don't need the attack of the tannins. You don't need the density of that. And Chianti Classico with a lot of age to it. You know, something with 15, 20 years from a great site. Like Vino Sorbo from Fontori or Il Poggio from Monsanto.
Sounds like those, a good Thanksgiving
those
to
wines
me.
Are, those wines are pretty magical. When we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, we got a few birds to go, including duck, which seems like everyone's favorite these days. All of that, wines that match it, and more on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine.